poster downstairs. And so I appreciate your service to the division in that way.
Thanks, Paul, and I appreciate the opportunity to be so prominently displayed. So I'd like to thank Paul and Shannon for the opportunity to speak. I've been a member of ASA for 30 years. I got my graduate degrees and postdocs all working on agronomic crops. However, now I'm a vegetable breeder, so I don't have a chance to come to this meeting as often as I'd like. My talk is going to be on the onion thiosulfonates, which are the suite of compounds that impart the pungent taste of onion. And I'll be talking about some of the health benefits associated with those compounds. And this is collaborative research with my lab. A lot of the work was done by a graduate student, Claudio Galmarini. John Foltz is in the medical school, Department of Cardiology at the University of Wisconsin. Erwin Goldman is a colleague of mine in horticulture. And then John McCollum is a biochemist in New Zealand. And we've all worked together on this project over the years. You all know this fact, that National Cancer Institute, the USDA, and other governmental agencies recommend that we eat 5 to 9 servings of fruits and vegetables every day, 5 to 7 for women, 7 to 9 for men, and that this diet rich in fruits and vegetables is associated with lower rates of cardiovascular disease and cancers. However, sometimes at the end of the day, maybe we're a little bit like this woman who comes in, and if you can't read it in the back, it says, she announces to her husband that I ate all the wrong things today. And as a plant breeder, that offers some real opportunities, because many of these beneficial compounds, there is genetic variation for, and we can select to increase their compounds, as we've heard today, with much of the bioavailability of the minerals. So my talk will be on sulfur and its role in the health functionality of onion. So the thiosulfonates are a suite of organosulfur compounds that show significant antiplatelet activities, which is associated with cardiovascular health. So I'll talk first about the thiosulfonates, then I'll define antiplatelet activity and how we measure it, and then move on to the genetics of it in onion. So this is a very simple diagram with regards to the production of thiosulfonates. So I've got to find my pointer here. Yeah. So sulfur is taken up as sulfate by the onion plant. Most of you are much more familiar with this process than I am. Incorporated into cysteine and goes on to glutathione, and then on to the many other compounds in plants. In the alliums, the onion family, there is a unique channel or off-branch of this process. And from glutathione is produced a series of compounds called the ACSOs, or the alkyl cysteine sulfoxides. These are the flavor precursors, and I'll refer to them as the flavor precursors. And they accumulate in the vacuole of the onion cell, or the onion bulb. Alliinase is an enzyme conditioned by a small gene family in onion that acts upon the flavor precursors to produce the thiosulfonates. So when you pick up an onion in the grocery store, you walk by a bag of onions, you don't start tearing, you don't start crying, you don't taste onion. That's because the substrate and the enzyme are physically removed. However, when you chop, mesh, cut an onion, alliinase is then able to reach its substrate, the flavor precursors, and then produces a whole series of compounds, sulfenic acids that condense upon themselves. Some of them are volatile, that produce the thiosulfonates, and then they are responsible for the pungent flavor of onion, the tearing effect of onion, and also the antiplatelet activity of onion. So these are very important compounds. And so they're the reason why this gentleman, who's in an onion-eating contest in Gilroy, California, has such a red face. Once you bite into the onion or cut it, the thiosulfonates are released, and then that imparts the pungent flavor. So how do these play a role in cardiovascular health? So we all have some degree of arterial blockage. It generally starts about age 7. And the rate at which our arteries accumulate plaque is dependent on our genetics, whether our family has had a history of health disease, of heart disease, our diet, exercise, things like that. And about 23% of the U.S. population has enough blockage of the arteries that we would classify it as they're suffering from some degree of cardiovascular disease. This is not a new problem. Actually, what you're seeing here is a section through an artery from a Chinese mummy that was this woman died 4,000 years ago, and you can see that she had almost complete blockage of her artery due to plaque buildup. So it's not a new problem, but one that we're more cognizant of. So platelet aggregation is important in this process because platelets are found in the blood, and they form plugs or aggregate at sites of vascular damage. So this is just a figure off of the internet, and what you're seeing here is just a schematic of a artery, and you can see it's about 50% blocked due to plaque buildup. If there's any type of damage to the arterial wall, platelets will aggregate at that point and then obviously restrict blood loss. There's many things that can cause damage to the arterial wall and then increase the probability of this happening. Obviously trauma, but also if you suffer from high blood pressure or if you smoke, that greatly weakens the arterial wall and then increases the probability of this happening. So what you're seeing here then is as the platelets aggregate, blood flow is further restricted as the platelets reduce the size of the area which the blood can flow through. And this is shown in this diagram, the process of formation of the platelets and restriction of the blood flow. This is a figure from my colleague John Foltz at UW. And what you're seeing here, along the x-axis is time. Along the y-axis is relative blood flow through a constricted artery. Now, this is an animal model, and what's happened is the animal has been opened, and a clamp has been artificially placed on the artery, reducing its size to about 40% blood flow. So here would be 100%, 0%, 40%. This is analogous to this picture you're seeing here. When the clamp is put on the artery, there is obviously damage done to the artery, and platelets begin to aggregate at that point, like you're seeing here. As the platelets aggregate, blood flow decreases, goes down, as the artery is restricted, goes down and down, down. Pressure increases, and then ultimately, the aggregated platelets will embolize or break free, and blood flow. I have to get my pointer here. There it is. Blood flow will be back to the 40% level. Platelets will aggregate. It will go down. And the embolization will occur. Up it goes and then down. And this is called cyclic flow reduction in blood flow through this constricted artery due to platelet aggregation. Now, obviously, if the aggregate doesn't embolize and this goes to zero, that's a very bad thing because you're either going to have a heart attack or a stroke. So there's as this comes back up and goes down, nothing happens, but if it stays down, obviously it has very serious consequences. There are a whole series of antiplatelet agents that restrict the ability of the platelets to aggregate, and then those would enhance blood flow through the constricted artery. And that's what you're seeing here. So here's the cyclic flow reduction that I talked about just now. Here's the an antiplatelet agent is added, and then you can see that the platelets are less able to aggregate, and then ultimately this stabilizes out. There are many antiplatelet agents, and many of you know this. One is aspirin. In fact, some of you may take a baby aspirin a day. That's exactly what you're doing, is restricting the ability of the platelets to aggregate. Coumadin in its various commercial forms, warfarin are other examples. And then research from John Foltz's lab demonstrated conclusively that red wine and purple grape juice, the flavonoids in those two drinks, also have a very strong effect. And then in collaboration with John Foltz, then we were able... Do you have a question? Or?
Yeah, sorry to interrupt real quick. What's the time frame on this?
This is minutes. Yeah. I'm not absolutely sure if it's a minute, but it's not over 5 minutes. And so we're talking about less than an hour here.
Okay.
Yeah, very short periods of time. So So onion juice, and the thiosulfonates in onion is a very effective antiplatelet agent, as you see here. This is actually from onion juice. Now, there are many, many compounds in onion juice, but my colleague Kirk Parkin at the University of Wisconsin has artificially synthesized the flavor precursors, isolated the alanase enzyme, generated the thiosulfonase, and demonstrated that they're the primary compound that's giving this effect. So onion juice has a very substantial antiplatelet activity that you enjoy when you eat the onion. Now, of course, I'm a plant breeder, and we've done a lot of genetic work on this, and we don't use the animal model because it is too expensive. We do use a in vitro model using a platelet aggregometer, which we give our own blood and then mix it with onion juice from various families or populations to measure the ability of the juice to restrict platelet aggregation in an in vitro assay. This is a difficult thing to do because you can't take any aspirin, drink wine, no Scheinerbach, no flavonoids whatsoever for a week before you give blood. So we have to carry that burden. So one question in your mind probably right now is, how much onion do I have to eat to enjoy this effect? Well, we have done a lot of work with individuals, and there's a huge individual component to this. Not only what you've eaten, but we can abstain from these other antiplatelet agents for a week and then take samples of blood and see very great differences in the amount of antiplatelet activity that we detect using the in vitro assay among individuals. So it's not possible for us to say that you have to eat X amount of onion to enjoy this effect. But it is widespread, and thiosulfonates do have an antiplatelet effect on everybody we've tested, which is everybody in my lab, Goldman's lab, and Foltz's lab, but we can't make any clear statements about the amount. Well, there's a catch-22 to all this, and that is that, and you all know this, when you cook the onion, you drive off the thiosulfonates. That's why a lot of people won't eat fresh onion, because they don't like the thiosulfonates. And when you drive off the thiosulfonates, obviously you reduce the pungency, but you also reduce the antiplatelet effect. So the vast majority of North Americans eat cooked onion. If you move out of North America or Europe into the developing world, Asia, Africa, and South America, much more commonly eaten is fresh garlic and onion. And so as an onion breeder in North America, I wanted to ask the question, can we breed and develop onions that have lower pungency so you'll have a tendency to eat more of it fresh but still retain some level of antiplatelet activity? So go back to the diagram I showed you earlier. So the idea then is that what variation do we have for thiosulfonate production, and then can we retain some level of antiplatelet activity with a pungency level that you would tend to eat a fresh onion? Well, there's different ways you can go about that. Actually, you all know about one of them, and that is growing the onion on an extremely low sulfur soil. Lower sulfur in the soil means less being channeled into the flavor precursors. Alanase is a small gene family, converting it to theoretically fewer thiosulfonates and then reducing the pungency, and also would reduce the antiplatelet activity. And that is exactly what the Vidalia onion is. For many of you may be familiar with it. It's an onion that is already relatively low pungency but is grown on an extremely low sulfur soil in Georgia, and that's probably the lowest pungency commercial onion that you can purchase. However, it has extremely low antiplatelet activity, so you can't get around it that way. We undertook a whole series of studies crossing different germplasms and studying the genetics of thiosulfonate production. Really, this is just one of the crosses, and this onion here is a hot pungent onion. In fact, if you ate this raw, it would blow your socks off, let me tell you. And this one on the other side here is a relatively low pungent onion that that we crossed and developed segregating families to do QTL analysis, as the previous speakers have mentioned. What we found is there's really only three chromosome regions in onion that are associated with thiosulfonate accumulation. Interestingly, in two separate causes, one in North America from my lab and another from New Zealand, both of these are high by low pungency crosses, segregating families, evaluated over environments. We found one region on chromosome 3 that was tightly associated with the pungency of onion. And when we looked at candidate genes across that region, we found two that were involved in the accumulation of, or the uptake and sequestration of sulfur in onion. One's a sulfide reductase and one was a sulfurylase. Probably you all in the audience know much more about this than I do, but my understanding is that both of these genes are involved the incorporation of sulfur into cysteine. So it's very early on in the biosynthetic pathway that leads ultimately to the thiosulfonates. Interestingly, all our data would indicate that the variation in onion is very early on in this process, either in low sulfur soils or these regions or genes that are controlling incorporation into cysteine very early on in this process. We've never found any effective alliinase, and that's what we were hoping, that the flavor precursors would be there. There'd be less of the enzyme, and then maybe we would have a lower pungency that way. But we've never observed any variation in alliinase. In fact, the onion accumulates huge amounts of alliinase and builds it up, and it's really the amount of sulfur that's coming into this pathway that seems to be important. So, just on this part of the talk, conclusions: more pungent onions, the greater the antiplatelet activity. In other words, the hotter the onion, and the better it is for you. Sulfur availability does affect pungency and the accumulation of thiosulfonates, either in the soil concentration or a major QTL at the bottom of chromosome 3 that is associated with this trait and carries a couple of structural genes. Obviously, that doesn't prove those structural genes are involved, but it is very interesting that they do map right to that QTL. So that brings up a bit of a conundrum that I have to think about as a plant breeder. What are we going to do? In the end, many places in the world, eating fresh, hot garlic and onion has no social stigma, if I could say it that way, and so they'll enjoy the antiplatelet effect. But here in North America, Europe, we tend not to eat those fresh onion. So here's my answer. This is an inbred that I released a couple of years ago for the breeders in the audience. It's cytoplasmic male sterile with its maintainer. It's a red onion because in North America, you're much more likely to eat fresh onion if it's red. It tends to find its way into salad bars. If you've looked at your submarine sandwich recently, it generally has red onions. And also, Pizza Hut and other major pizza companies have put red onions on their pizza. So red onions, because of the colors, tend to be eaten fresh or more lightly cooked. If you had salsa last night with your Mexican dinner, you would have noticed red onion in there. This onion has about 11 micromoles of pyruvate per mil. That's how we measure pungency. That's a little bit warm. If you ate that fresh, you'd probably feel it. However, on a sandwich or in a salad, it would be very commonly eaten. So that's the balance that we try to reach and that provide inbreds that ultimately go into hybrid production for types of onions that are most likely to be eaten fresh. How am I doing on time? I think I'm okay. Okay. I just want to finish up with one short story about an approach that was developed by a couple of my colleagues in New Zealand that had a relatively unhappy ending, but directly is important in this story. Anytime anybody finds out that I'm an onion breeder, the first thing they say is, can't you do something about the tearing? You know, and actually there is something we can do about that. Tearing is actually called the lacrimatory factor, well-known problem with onion. You can buy glasses to avoid the effect, and these are on the internet, only $25. For us that just cook in the evening, it's probably not a problem, but if you're at the local Pizza Hut cutting up hundreds of onions in the back room, probably it's a good idea. Well, there's a genetic way we can address this too. And this is the same pathway I just showed you. Here's the flavor precursors of cysteine sulfoxides, acted upon alanase. And then they give a whole series of these sulfenic acids that spontaneously rearrange to form the thiosulfonates. And then this is what is imparting the antiplatelet activity. Japanese researchers a couple years published a short paper in Nature, and they demonstrated there was a unique enzyme, FLS, lacrimatory factor synthase, that actually acts upon one major sulfenic acid to give the lacrimatory factor. That's a volatile sulfenic acid. It condenses on the water film on your eye, and that's what gives the burning effect or the tearing effect of onion. Well, that's pretty easy. We can address that. And two of my colleagues, shown here in Onion World magazine, and yes, there is an Onion World magazine. It is the voice of our industry. This is Dr. Colin Eady here in New Zealand and his graduate student who used an RNAi construct for the lacrimatory factor synthase, transformed it into onion, and produced the first tearless onion. And it worked. The onion is tearless. You notice significantly less burning when you cut the onion. But more importantly, because you're blocking the production of some of these volatile thiosulfonates, they rearrange, and the onion bulb actually has greater concentrations of thiosulfonates than a normal onion, which would lose them to the volatile phase. So the onion is actually healthier. It's tearless and healthier. Unfortunately, this story has a very sad ending, and that is that the companies that were involved in funding this research and the entity that Dr. Eady works for in New Zealand did not want to be associated with a transgenic vegetable, and all these plants have been destroyed. So there's a commercial opportunity there for some of us in North America. So I'm going to finish up now and just go back to the basic flow diagram here. So the thiosulfonates, important compounds in the alliums responsible for the antiplatelet activity, which we can measure, the pungency, the flavor that we actually eat onion for, and that all the variation that we've been able to find so far really are involved in the early steps of sulfur uptake and accumulation, and that once it gets into here, then there's plenty of alienase that's going to produce the thiosulfonates. So. A lot of thanks to many people over the years in this research. I've introduced almost all of them so far. Chris Town and Fu Chang at the Venter Institute join us for a lot of the sequencing work that's been done to allow us to identify the candidate genes. John McCollum and Colin Eady at Plant and Food, and then we've enjoyed funding from a whole series of USDA agencies. And in the end, I'll ask tonight that you eat more onions. Thank you. The question was, why is pyruvate a measure of pungency? From the ACSOs, the flavor precursors, 1 mole of pyruvate, enzymatically derived pyruvate, is produced for each mole of the thiosulfonates. So it's just a direct, it's an indirect measure. Yeah, and we can use a colorimetric assay that's very efficient in a breeding program. Did you have a question over here?
I don't know anything about the partitioning of genetic variation in onion, but you mentioned that all of the variation, at least in your breeding populations, is isolated to the beginning part of that pathway. Are there wild or related alien species that cross with onion for which you can look for variation, for example, in alienase or later mechanisms?
Yeah, the question was with regards to other accessions or wild allium species that may provide opportunities to identify variation later in the pathway that ultimately leads to the thiosulfonates. Unfortunately, there is not a well-defined progenitor of onion. There is something called Allium vavilovi that grows very rarely in Iran and the southern part of the former Soviet Union. That is a very hot onion. In fact, we have selected for lower pungency in the eons that onion has been under selection. So we've not had many accessions to look at, but the ones we have are very pungent. But it's difficult to do the crosses and generate segregating families that we could try and identify different steps in the pathway. But within cultivated onion, as I said, we have never seen any variation that we can explain later in the pathway. So it really seems to be the onion is very efficient at taking up the sulfur, and then, which makes sense because it's a defense mechanism that the plant has used for a long time by producing thiosulfonates. There's another question? Okay. Thank you.